Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Donkey Brass Talks. Today is the 21st day of April 2020. My name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be with you on another Tuesday morning. I have to admit that I look forward to being with you on Tuesdays now more than ever before because I get an opportunity to leave home. So it's good to be with you. And it's good to also have in our company Mr. John Stout. He's your technical guru. He would take us through until 2 p.m. So, of course, we have the pleasure of each other's company until 2 p.m. I hope you will call me on 434-1790 or you can WhatsApp using the chat 266-IVOB or you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. So, this morning, what do we have happening? I'm happy to tell you that they are, we're going to have a conference call with the minister responsible for the Barbados Water Authority, Mr. Wilfred Abrams, and also Mr. Keith Roy Halliday, who's the general manager of the Barbados Water Authority. We have a conference call with them at 11, and I've asked the gentleman to come on the program to speak to you directly concerning a non-COVID issue, but an issue which is extremely important to many people because we continue to receive calls and complaints about the water situation and the belief that the situation is not good enough even outside of a national crisis such as the one that we're having now. So I thought it best to ask the gentleman to respond directly to the calls and the questions that have been coming in because I really am not in a position to offer any reasonable defense. So 11 o'clock, both gentlemen will be on the air. They will take a few calls, and we're more than happy to welcome your intervention at that time. But until then, we have our normal program, which starts with, today we have had the announcement of the passing of two distinguished gentlemen. One of them is Mr. Joe Edgell. Joe Edgell was a member of parliament in the Barbados Labour Party administration of PASS, and Joe is someone who has been adequately eulogized by the Prime Minister of Barbados. I know of Joe's contribution to the Barbados Labour Party. Sadly, I do not know Joe that well myself, and I am not in a position really to offer anything on top of what the Prime Minister has offered, and I want to convey condolences to his family on the passing of a stalwart of the Barbados Labour Party, notwithstanding. I can, however, speak in a slightly more fulsome way to the passing of another gentleman, Mr. Astor B. Watts, whose association was with the Democratic Labour Party. My understanding is that his association goes back a whole long time. Astor B. Watts was 99 years old, I believe. He just celebrated his birthday recently, and he has sadly left us. So let me start by conveying condolences to his family on behalf of my own family on the passing of a true stalwart of the Democratic Labour Party and a gentleman who has made a contribution over and above to Barbados. I have always admired Astor's intestinal fortitude, one could argue. I admired the fact that at 98 or 99 years old, Astor was still take himself down to George Street most Fridays and be there presiding over the lunchtime lecture series. Astor, as I understand it, in a professional capacity, worked at Rayside Construction for many years. Naturally, he has been retired for the better part of 35 years, and as a result of that, he would not have been involved in work. Nonetheless, he was associated with the Democratic Labour Party's lunchtime lecture series since around the age 2000. And I'll tell you something about Astor, which is something I have noticed. And he always said to me on the few occasions that we talked that the Democratic Labour Party has a proud tradition of coalescing around food. And if you look at the stalwarts and the founding fathers of the Democratic Labour Party, you will always notice that the idea of cooking and eating and communing around a meal and breaking bread with persons to essentially assure the brotherhood was something that is a tradition that is deep within the Democratic Labour Party's bosom. So we have people like Arrow Barrow, who would often invite persons to either a Culloden Farm or Kampala to share and break bread with him. My understanding is that in those days, which Astor would have known and I wouldn't, that anytime one went to Culloden Farm, invariably the entrance was through the kitchen, and that was by no accident. And that is where the meetings were held. That is where the conversation took place. As Starr came to the Democratic Labour Party's rescue, one could argue, around the year 2000. And of course, that was just shortly after the crushing defeat of 1999. And as Starr understood that by bringing that type of forum where supporters and persons who are interested in the Democratic Labour Party can come together and break bread on a Friday and commune around a conversation would be something that would be important to the Democratic Labour Party's future. He understood that, and he brought that to the fore. He used a facility that was created. I believe the person was Frank De Silva that was in the forefront of creating that Arrow Barrow Museum, you could call it the Arrow Barrow Studio, that was part of what Astar would have used. So he brought together that. He brought together some ladies who could cook. And every Friday he had a lunchtime lecture, which he more or less covered the scheduling himself. And I thought that that was an important contribution that Astar made. And Astar was there. He was there every week. He came. He never had a lot to say at the lecture, but nonetheless, his presence was one that was reassuring. Astar used a senior's license. And one of the important points that we all have to remember is that there are seniors who can say things that the rest of us cannot say. And seniors can use that license candidly to reflect, to critique, and to offer candid opinions in ways that others would not dare do so, because it is what we call a senior's license. And he used his very creatively. Astar never minces words. He called on the call-in program from time to time to put me right. He often spoke in the national domain. I remember when the Democratic Labour Party lost in 2018, Astar candidly said that he, when he heard the result, he had to sit down and take something to cool off his head. And I thought that was an amusing reflection on where he was at that point in time in terms of his mental state. But nonetheless, Astar indicated that he was confident the Democratic Labour Party would be fighting back. And he echoed similar comments when Don Valinis was arrested for that offense. He also offered similar comments with a confidence that the Democratic Labour Party would be back. And he said that he was anxious to restart the lecture series because he understood that that would be an important part of his the Democratic Labour Party's reemergence, so to speak. So his clarity of thought continued until the end. And I also think that a part of his contribution was that he demonstrated what the older population can and should do. There are a few people at 98 years old who could have been out to a lecture series, who could have been speaking with such clarity, who could call on a call-in program, or who could articulate what was essentially an institutional memory of the Democratic Labour Party, because he was there. He was there with Arrow Barrow. He would have been there with David Thompson. He was there with Frendel Stewart. He was there with Erskine Sandiford. He knew people like Sleepy Smith. He would have cheered when Sleepy Smith did the few lunchtime lectures himself. He would have cheered them as well. He was there with Bramford Tate and all of the others. He was there. So he was the institutional memory of the organization, and he remained forthright, and he showed that active aging is actually possible. It is possible for persons into their 90s or well into their 90s to continue to come down and make a contribution. And I always felt that his willingness and his ability and his intestinal fortitude to come out every week was what kept him going so well, you know, and looking so good right up until the very end. So today we recognize the contribution of Astar B. Watts, and I certainly would want to lend my own voice in acknowledging that the contribution that he has made has been an outstanding one. I think it is a one to which we can learn an important lesson. And certainly as we all grow older, I think that he is one of the people that we need to look to understand how exactly one is supposed to continue to make a contribution and how exactly one is supposed to age gracefully. So Astar B. Watts dead at 99 years old. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I have to read a note here that has come from My apologies. I have to read a note here which has come from the press secretary to the prime minister. Peter, can you ask the presenter to emphasize that the persons who are still in lanes when supermarkets close their doors at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. must be served. This is not optional. The acting prime minister wants to make the point that was often reiterated in some reporting since the press conference yesterday. The word may was used rather than must. So the important point here is that if you are standing in line at 11 and 4, you must be served. And that is the instruction of the acting prime minister. I also received a note from Maxine McLean, who tells me the A-Star was actually 98 on Saturday. My apologies. I read an article from a year ago which referred to him as 98-year-old Astor B. Watts, and I know he just celebrated a birthday, so my assumption was that he was now 99. So my apologies, Astor B. Watts is actually 98 years old, so that would be the appropriate age. So apologies. Dr. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning,
and welcome to the first caller. How are you doing?
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Peace be unto you, Mr. Wickham.
Thanks.
And for me, I get in the feedback. I can hear it myself.
You probably need to turn on your phone.
I ain't got no, my phone is up.
Okay.
Anyway, I just want to pass on deepest condolences, express deepest condolences to, I wanted Mr. Watts to make 100.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
And,
me too.
And to Mr. The distinguished gentleman, all two are distinguished, Mr. Edgell.
Edgell, yeah.
And what you spoke about, Mr. Barra, I always, when I have friends here and I have the book privilege, very good cook.
Yeah.
And I always remember, and I would always say to my friends too, who come in from overseas, when he said when he was in England, and I take the gas, went out or something, he took newspaper and he wrapped the pot and it finished cook his rice.
Mm-hmm.
So you could look in the book and you could see that part. And when my friends come here, I always give them that book as a souvenir from Barbados.
Yeah, I mean the cuisine wasn't exactly my favorite type of cuisine, but I acknowledge the contribution that would have made.
The Lord, well, you know, you say you don't believe in Bible, but the servant God give you something to eat, don't say it unclean. So I can bless it and let it.
All right.
Digest.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow,
but you knew Astor personally, though.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I was really hoping that he would have made. I thought he would have made. I was hoping he would have made the 100 as well. I was looking forward to see him in the company of the Governor General. Sadly, it would probably not have happened if he had turned 100. Although I don't know when the Governor General will start making visits again, you know, but it's unfortunate. But nonetheless, you celebrate the contribution that he has made and the fact that he had really good health right up until the end. You know, he was, I don't know what his condition was last week, but his health was amazing to see him going, walking unaided and whatnot. And it was good.
Anyhow, I have some points here to make.
Sure, go ahead.
I heard a frontline worker speaking to Cashy not long ago, and I was really touched. And at 1 o'clock is 1 o'clock, and this is not business as usual. And we all of us now have to have a heart, a mind, and conscience. Our conscience must be our guide.
What was the comment? Because I heard the last part of it, but
she said that she is a frontline worker, and she went to Western Union. I don't know if it's her day or was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she have a friend that allow her to pay her bills.
Okay.
And she said that, but the place, you know, didn't open all the time. That I think yesterday would have been the last. If the money go back, you know, they're going to take out their money.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would got to pay now to send it back. So she was trying to get it. She got there at 1:45.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady sent her up by Fairchild Street. And she said she was there for 3 hours. And that is sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to, and the door then shut. So if the door wasn't shut, then that means that they were still doing business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Some of us very harsh. But my concern, I heard you say you're going to bring Mr. Abrams.
At 11, yeah.
And the other gentleman, I might not be able to get to, because I called to give my condolences and to speak about what happening, to let people know that you must. This is the time now to you could come back tomorrow, come back the next day to see what is going on. My concern is, Peter, for years now, I've been getting brown water. I keep asking, I keep complaining, and nothing they have. I will get water from my neighbor. Sometimes the first thing from the morning when they open, it hurt my heart to see how dirty the water is. I was going at my neighbor to catch water. Since with this COVID, it hurt my heart to go and stand up at the door and at the window. And people see me catching water, and I pay $83 in change. You know, people passing and see me think that my water off. I call Mr. Abrams, saying this thing, and he spoke to me very good. And via his privacy, I spoke to him at home. He took my my number for the meter, and he took my account number. I haven't seen nobody, haven't heard nobody, nothing. And I'm not supposed even to live with. I can't get them people coming my house with water. So I have to be getting bottles. I have a big bucket. I got to be careful because I don't want to come out where anything happens. You don't know how you're getting it. And it's real insulting to me.
It's not good enough. Well, I'm anxious to hear the two gentlemen respond to those types of issues. Do you have a filter of any sort on your tap? Oh, okay. All right, ma'am. Sorry to hear that. One of the things I was going to suggest is that if you had a filter or if you could have procured a filter to ensure that at least the drinking water was not, you know, dirty, that might not be a bad idea in the short term. You can either have one attached to the tap or you can do what many of us do, which is essentially buy one of these water filtration things, which is probably $20 or $30 that you catch water and that's the water that you drink from. And it uses a water filter, which is, I think, carbon, and that happens fairly quickly, and then you can drink from it after. So it might be an idea to pick up one if you don't have one already, your next hardware store day, and at least ensure that you're not putting any of that dirty water into your system. My sense is that the sediment is not great for you, but I don't know that the sediment is anything that's going to kill you. It is probably just literally just that sediment, and the carbon filter will take that out quite easily and ensure that you're drinking good water. It is probably not an idea to drink unfiltered water in these times anyhow, because it's not a good idea. So that's it. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you?
How are you, ma'am? Good. I like that reference.
Anyway, are you okay?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
What is that feedback at the arm? I can hear myself as well. And I don't have no radio on, just my phone. It's really annoying.
I know. I was just turning some buttons here, but...
Maybe you touched something you didn't supposed to touch.
You tell me to don't trouble the buttons, because I ain't really know... Nobody bothers. You're coming through quite low. That's the only thing. Huh? You're coming through quite low. So
anyway, Peter. I know what those people that suffering for water was like. I wasn't suffering for water, but I was getting the water that sometimes it smelled like a dead man. You bury dead people in it, you know. And but for, I did that.
How you know what water that is buried dead people smell like?
But you never.
You used to work in a thing. A home.
No. You know that, though. You know, in the old time days, you have to bury them quick. Anyway, never mind.
I know. I never had them days. I thankfully have never had to encounter the odor of a dead person, and certainly not the water that has been used to wash a dead person. Anyway, so you grew up in a time when that used to happen?
Well, I'm a 72, Peter.
No, but that started happening long ago.
Hey, listen, Peter, never mind that. Listen, you know, you when you go home and there you have a dead in you, there's some people bury their own dead themselves.
I never know them days. But them days done a long time. Because I have relatives into the 90s who told me that they don't know of that experience.
No. They still do that in back home. They like to dress their own dead and bury them.
You mean in Jamaica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, listen now. We'll send off, don't worry. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Peter, what I'm saying, the people that get in the water, I know they feel like, we used to get water until Minister Kerry Simmons, when he was then, you know, in the ministry, he make sure the people we get clean water now. Peter, you know, if the water authority should pay me back for what I've lost, I wouldn't have to pay no water bill for 100 years. I've lost tons and tons of clothes because the water is brown and there is no way you're going to drink groundwater. Don't care what filter you have, and cook with that. You understand? So I know what those people are.
So where you get your water from?
I get my water clean, beautiful water now. Oh, for years.
Okay, from the tap.
Yeah, true, yeah. Mr. Simmons. You know, we get. Whoa, water is so pretty. Mm. We never know water so pretty. Understand? So what I'm saying, everyone now that is suffering from water, I know how you feel, but this government cannot do everything. They're trying their best to get you all to get water. You think they feel happy to know that you're not getting water? But, you know, just give them the chance. With this COVID stupid thing now, we all have everything like it put back. I don't know. I cannot say that. But all I'm praying that with the next year or so, everyone will be having flowing water, you know? But that's not what I call. I call to congratulate the mayor among the team and the minister, Mr. Bastik. Boy, I tell you, I really feel for that man. And I really feel for everyone who is working on the front line because it's not easy dealing with this thing. Do you see how Miss Monty get ahead of everything? And look at Jamaica now. We're nearly over 200 people with this virus. The whole country going to get locked down tomorrow.
Okay.
First it was my district. Now it's the whole of Jamaica going to get locked down. Mm. Because this thing is that there was too late in, you know, preventing what was going on. You know there is a virus, and you let people through on the 18th and the 19th without any testing at the airport. You think those people are going to come now? I think they're stupid anyway to come and say, oh, I was on that flight. Now the police are looking for them. And for what this government have done, Lord, they need them. They need a 100% mark because we are only now, 49 in isolation now. What a wonderful work they've done.
Well, you know, I'm always hard-pressed to second-guess what different governments have decided based on the advice that they have been given. Jamaica, as you know better than me, is an extremely large country, considerably larger than Barbados.
Not large, Mr.
Man is large. But I just saying, Winnie, while I appreciate your comments, I also appreciate that the realities in Jamaica are considerably different. Proportionally, Jamaica's infection rate is actually a lot lower than Barbados's in proportion to the population. That's something to remember, that proportionally, Barbados is actually among one of the higher rates of infection in the region.
But you know what I'm saying, Peter. If you know there is a...
no problem, Vinny. I would accept that, and I think that we can move on from there. All I'm saying is let's not rush the judgment.
Now, the next thing is, we have to, because I talk to my families out there every day, and they're letting me know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so it's not that I see it in the news. They call me every day. I call them. In the last 2 weeks, it's $250 worth of top-up. I do to call Jamaica because you cannot call them on WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So okay. I'm telling you, you know, they're calling and telling me what's going on. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard for somebody that live in Montego Bay to live in St. Catherine, just live in Port Antony to Manchester. And, you know, things is, you know, what they get out there and you have babies that you know, it's really bad. And some of the idiots are behaving so bad in the street. So, you know, and my nephew now that live in Philippines, he's telling me it's really bad. His wife went out and nearly 5.5 hours standing in the line to get shopping, you know, and it's really bad. And she have to go back again. She didn't get the shopping.
Yeah.
So she leave home at 2:00 in the morning.
All right, Winnie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I want to read a message I've received here and also want to make another reflection that one of my good friends online has been asking to do. The gentleman says, Peter, I hope all is well with you and your family. I continue to enjoy, like you, I enjoy physical outdoor activity like hiking, cycling, and jogging. I do understand the reason for physical distancing, but there's little one can do around your home or nothing at all to do. Do you not think that the government has dropped the ball in not letting persons have at least 1 hour to exercise, knowing that Barbados has very high numbers of non-communicable diseases? I think that Antigua has allowed persons to exercise outdoors. Peter, staying at home during this time, eating all this unhealthy food, pasta and snacks, is going to create another problem of obesity, hypertension and so on, while trying to prevent the virus. I do feel that government needs to find a balance, allowing persons some form of exercising, even though that alone by yourself during this period. And I can comment either privately or publicly on brass tacks, and I'm happy to comment publicly and say to you, sir, that while you know very well that I am not a person that has been rushing to judgment regarding the various decisions that government has taken, and I've supported the vast majority of them, but like you, I do agree that this is an issue that requires almost immediate attention. In most countries, there has been the requirement for physical exercise, or the allowance for physical exercise, once or twice a day, up to 1 hour, I believe, and that has been something that has been allowed. For example, in France, they have the option to take the dog out for a walk, largely because that's the way the dogs have to defecate and so on. There is no such allowance in Barbados, and thankfully, most of us who have dogs have a backyard in which they can defecate, but ultimately we do not have that option to go out for a walk or to take any form of physical exercise. And as the gentleman said, Kevin, I am in full agreement with him that I do feel this requires urgent attention. I mean, I didn't say anything initially because this was an initial shutdown period, but I think that after 4 weeks, all of us are coming to the stage where there are some of us who can exercise indoors. I probably should be able to, quite frankly, because I have enough space, but I just don't feel the motivation that comes from either running or taking a bike ride and somewhere. And I think that while I am conscious of the problems that the congregating can take, I do feel that physical activity alone is something that all of us need. And I think that we're getting to a stage now where that has become a concern. The other concern relates to the rum. And I have to admit that more than anyone else, my good friend Curtis Griffith, who happens to be from St. Lucie, has continually raised questions about the logic of this prohibition. As I said to a gentleman this morning, and it wasn't Curtis that I was talking to, I tend not to judge people. And I am fortunate that my main poison is coffee. Coffee is legal and it's just freely available. So I can poison myself twice, three times, four times, five times a day if necessary. And until I get to the doctor, really, there are no challenges that are raised. There are persons whose poison is alcohol, and they like to poison themselves several times during the course of a day. I often question the wisdom of it, but as I said, I don't judge. And there are others whose poison, of course, is ganja, and they would want to poison themselves several times a day. The ganja is illegal, and that's another conversation for another day, but certainly the alcohol is not. During this period of shutdown, there has been a prohibition on not the consumption, but the sale of alcohol. And a prohibition that has lasted this long has challenged several of us in terms of our stocks of alcohol. Now, I have a fairly well-stocked liquor cabinet, then you who've been to my house will note. And the reason it is stocked in that way is largely because I am not a person that drinks regularly. So ultimately, the drinks are there for my friends. So my liquor cabinet stocks are overflowing these days because I have had no friends coming over during the period of the shutdown. But for others, there has been a challenge where they drink daily and sometimes frequently during the day, and would probably want to drink even more frequently during this period of lockdown. Again, I don't know if that is wise, but in the same way that it is probably not wise for me to drink as much coffee as I do, I am not about to judge. And I frankly think that we have come to a point now where there has to be a rethink of that alcohol prohibition as well. I do not think it is necessary and wise for persons to be drinking in public places, like at bars and so on. And I think that it is wise that the rum shops, which operate as village shops, should focus on selling the food and so on in this time and not on the rum. But at the same time, I don't really understand why it is necessary for when a person goes into a supermarket for that individual not to be able to pick up a bottle of EXO, and I would say EXO and not ESA Fields White Rum because I don't know if that's good for you. But anyhow, that's just a preference. So that's my take on the two controversial issues on the exercise and on the alcohol. There has been no prohibition on the consumption of alcohol in either the United States or in France. I don't know what the United Kingdom has done. I don't believe they have prohibited it either. And I did discuss with my partner the whole idea of banning the consumption of alcohol in France. And, you know, the reaction was that you cannot tell a French person that they should not have wine with a meal, because ultimately a meal is not a meal without wine. And the only place you can get wine is from a supermarket or a wine shop. So they are entitled to open and function because they believe that wine is important. I think that for many Barbadians, the consumption of rum is also important to their mental health. The consumption of too much may be a challenge to their mental health, but the consumption of rum is also part of what people think is an essential daily ritual. I have a colleague who died at 95, and this is Professor Sutton. She lived in the United States, and Prof drank rum every single day. And her argument was that it is part of her mental and physical health, and she lived quite well to 95 years old. Every evening, she will have a glass of Barbados rum. I mean, she even used to drink Eclipse, which I think is challenging. Anyhow, let me not get into my biases regarding rum. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Good. I'm a first-time caller, but...
Welcome to the program, ma'am. Sorry that I had to hold you on the line for that long diatribe regarding rum and coffee.
And as a former healthcare worker, I am not very keen on this rum and all this coffee. But anyhow, that's not why I'm calling.
So what is your poison, ma'am?
My poison?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any. Let me.
You don't
think.
Do anything bad?
No. Oh, yes. None of us perfect. Yes. Anyhow, what
so what is it? Is Pigfoot sauce?
Nah. Don't like Pigfoot. I don't like Pigfoot. Anyhow, let me tell you why I'm calling, because I'm sure a lot of people are.
Sure.
Meeting.
Okay.
As a senior citizen, I went to Massey and Warren's this morning, and I have to congratulate the management and the staff there. Before I got there before 7, because you know the supermarkets are now reopening at 7. And the guy came out, I am not sure, with a loudspeaker. And by the time he had finished speaking to us, we knew exactly what we had to do, all the do's and the don'ts. Mm-hmm. There was no rushing. People were orderly. They went in. It's a good thing with some of them with walking sticks. And people just got on, and he was there to guide us and motivate us. So this is a hearty thank you to the staff at Massey and Warren's. That's okay. All they have to say.
I actually saw that online. Someone showed that person online on Sunday. And I do agree with you that it was useful that that person made an announcement. You know, it was very crisp. They said what to do, what not to do, told you how to stand in line, and, you know, gave instructions. And I also thought it was brilliant. I'm somewhat disturbed, though, ma'am, that you're not willing to tell us what your poison is on the air.
Don't be disturbed. You can ask your mom. She probably would know because I worked with her. That's all I have to say. All right. Thank you.
All right, ma'am. Thank you for calling, and thank you for that complimentary remark for the staff at Massey. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
Good morning, John. Good morning to our listeners.
Okay, cool.
Greetings. I would like to say to the families that lost their loved ones in death, that there's going to be a resurrection of the righteous and the unrighteous. The resurrection means a coming alive again.
You said the unrighteous too?
Yes, sir.
So like me, so I will still be resurrected?
What? If you die now, you'll be resurrected.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll be given a chance. You understand?
Given a chance to do what?
To live according to God's righteous standards.
And what are those standards, sir?
The very same standards you got today.
Okay. All right. Well, you get two bites at the cherry.
That's right. But it doesn't give you an excuse to do wrong.
But it sounds that way to me. Because if you're gonna be resurrected regardless, you know, you could as well go down swinging.
No, but understand, you see, Mr. Wickham, the wages of sin is death.
Right.
So if you die before the end of the system, you pay that wage.
But it sounds to me like there are a lot of people who haven't been sinning very heavily that have been dying too. So
exactly. Because the wage of sin pays is death.
I know, but the point is that them people who dying in sinning.
Which people that?
They got a lot of people who have been dying recently that have not been sinning.
No, I'm not. I didn't say those who practice sin.
So I am a sinner, but the point is that I'm saying there are a lot of non-sinners that have been dying.
No, you don't understand what you mean when you
say that. I don't, no, because it isn't making sense. If you're saying the wages of sin is death, it should mean that those who are not sinning should not be dying.
Let me explain to you what it means.
Please do.
It simply means you're born with sin, which causes death. You understand? It is the difference between those...
But if I born with sin and I get dead, then what's the point? Because it sounds to me like there's nothing that I could do to avoid death. Because if I born with sin, then, you know, the dog done dead. So...
You see, that's the point. Because...
But what is sin exactly, though? What is sin?
What is sin?
Yeah.
Imperfection.
Imperfection?
Yeah, imperfection.
So that's the case, then we're all sinners.
That is what the Bible said. That is what Jesus
But are there bigger sins than others? Or all sins are sins?
No. There are some sins that does not carry death penalty.
Like what, so? Eating pork?
No. The sin that carries death penalty is if you come to know God and then turn away from it, then there's no forgiveness.
So that's the mortal sin?
That's, if you could call it that.
So what about eating pork?
Eating pork?
Mm-hmm.
No, that is not a sin, man.
Well, that's not a sin?
No, that's a topic for another story.
But the words of Leviticus make it clear that the consumption of pork is a mortal sin. Okay. Alongside wearing polyester and planting different crops side by side. You introduced the concept of sin, so I'm just trying to disaggregate dissect this question of sin, because I'm anxious to know what is sinful behavior. Is the consumption of rum sinful?
No.
Is the consumption of coffee sinful?
No.
And the consumption of pork, you said, is not sinful?
No.
So then I can eat anything or drink anything?
Don't drink poison.
Sorry?
Don't go and drink poison.
Yeah, but that's pretty obvious. That is sinful, but it's stupid.
No. The
pork. Yo, sir, I can let you make your point because people can still start complaining online that I'm harassing you. So.
Because they call about that, no.
Uh-huh.
Listen, what they call about this morning is that...
Actually, somebody is here online saying that actually only the dead in Christ shall be resurrected. The others are caught up in the sky. So if I'm alive when Christ comes, apparently I'm going up in the sky. So hopefully I can be around until he comes. I just would like him to come soon because right now I got a lot of saving that need to be done on this earth.
All right, Peter, I can get rid of you and let's be choosy at that. Let me just make this point here, right? My concern this morning is about those people who might be not having enough food to eat in their homes, you know? Due to the dislocation of their employment, due to the circumstances that we are in. So I was just saying to our brothers and sisters, which is our Barbadian fellow man, that we could speak out and try to help those who are less fortunate, okay, by sharing some food with them or something that we can do. Because we will know them because they live in our neighborhood. I will know who lives down by you, and you will know who lives up by me, okay? So I was just saying that we could work together because I know the government have an agency there set out to help them. And no pages, we don't come out and still be hungry. We rather stand and date first, right?
I agree with you, and I support that point that this is a time that we have to look out for our fellow man more than others. And I do feel that at the level of the community, it is important that we know who is vulnerable around us, or what assistance such vulnerable persons might need. In situations where we are not able to assist those persons ourselves, certainly the authorities, we can make contact with them. We have the Poverty Alleviation Committee. We have the Welfare Department. So certainly we should call on authorities if we can't help ourselves to be able to deal with these things. I have a question here for you, though, from someone online. And he says, good morning, Peter. I would like this caller to say how he accounts for an all-powerful God who sees everything and does nothing. He's clearly indifferent. If he sees everything and can do nothing, then he's either incompetent or indifferent. And if he's unwilling or unable, then he's evil. Let them answer that question of who is this God and what exactly is God useful for in a situation like this. This is a question from someone online, not from me. What is your response, sir?
Well, let me respond to that. You cannot see me, right? No, I cannot see you. But I do not know what you are doing. You see, we may say that there is this God, that these things happening, and he's not doing anything. But the Bible says that there's a time set aside, okay, to clean up the earth. Because it says that I'm creating a new heaven and a new earth, and in it righteousness is to dwell. Mm-hmm. See, Peter, it is all about time.
All about what?
Time.
Time?
Yes.
Okay.
You see, right. Jehovah is God. And Jehovah set in his time to take action on the earth, but he's being patient. Because before he
came out. Taking earth, too long, though.
But you see,
Mr. Vickam, no, taking too long, because I mean, I was hearing about his coming for a long time, and I finally went I went Sunday school and hear about him coming, and he's still coming. He's taking long, and they got issues on the earth that need dealing with, like this COVID thing. If you're gonna come, just come and get on with it and clean up things. Because the reason that people like me don't believe is that when you come in for all this time and you ain't get here yet, I am inclined to believe that you ain't exactly real. Either that, or alternatively, you're watching what's going on and you don't really care to do anything about it.
No,
that's a serious question that religious people have to answer in the wake of all of this, you know. What is the use of all of this belief when all of this mess is going on? And if he is all-knowing and all-seeing, yet they're sitting on and watching it, chooses to do absolutely nothing about it. And people going down left, right, and center, the innocent, the guilty, the sinful, the unsinful, the strong, the weak, the young, the old, the black, the white, rich, poor, everybody going down swinging. Thousands and thousands of people are dying, and if it is that he is in control, it doesn't appear as though he either is in control or really cares.
No. You see, this
way
you're missing the point.
I'm missing the point. Please tell me what the point is.
That's what
I'm because saying. I understand the point of all of this.
But who are there? Listen. The Bible says, right? A day with Jehovah is like 1,000 years.
Oh.
So to us, it looks long, right? Also, the Bible says that the whole world is then in the power of the wicked one.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
So Jehovah's taking long, he's patient,
mm-hmm.
because he does not desire anyone to be destroyed. Okay?
Yeah.
Those who want Jehovah to act now, better be careful about what they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because you see, Jesus died for us, and Jesus went through a lot of suffering, you know, a lot of pain. You see, that's the part of Christ's ministry on the earth a lot of people are not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
He was mocked, he was spat on, he was criticized, he was put a blind over his eyes to say, prophesy for us, prophesy tells with you. He even was told to get down, mm-hmm. offered the torch to say, and come and save us, and then we will believe. So you see, the very same thing that went through in Jesus' day, we are going through now. So mm-hmm. we have to get some suffering to get to the good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to happen. It's in the memories about it. So all what we have to do, I go through suffering too, my friend. Don't think it escaped me. But I don't get so many on the air and say that Jehovah don't exist. But look at COVID-19. We never see COVID-19 before. But here now.
Mm-hmm.
So because we never see some boys resurrected from the dead, that domination can happen. Okay.
All right, sir. Fair enough. Thank you very much for calling, and thank you for tolerating my badgering of someone called it online. I appreciate hearing from you. Dr. Brass Stocks, 434-1790. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, yeah, morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
I could be better, but yeah, I could be worse too.
Well, good. But you trying to hold on there and... Mm-hmm. I just would say this, dude, there is a God, and he do love you, and he loves all of us, even the ones that don't believe in him.
That's good.
And that is much as I would say on that part.
You know, my mother has always said in life, it is important that you recognize who loves you and not necessarily who you love. So I got that.
Good. I just want to offer also to my condolences to the family and my dear comrades of our really champion of the Democratic Labor Party, Astor B. Watts. He is the proper example of what it means to be loyal and committed to the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I must compliment you, Peter Wickham, for the kind words that you said in your opening remarks. Thank you very much for that. And it was well said. And, you know, may his soul rest in peace and may he rise in glory. And I want the family to be strong. And to the comrades, continue to be focused and have the backbone. And as you said, the fortitude that this gentleman has had, as I knew him personally, and I've learned quite a lot from him, taught me a lot and others. And he would have, as you greatly said, been in the company of the great Earl Walton Barrow and also the late Cameron Tudor and other great stalwarts of this excellent party known as the DLP.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And stuff. Well, moving on from that, I just want to say, I reiterate again, also with this continued nonsense you're seeing around at the various supermarkets, people are not observing this social distancing. I saw it yesterday with the behaviors of adults, and it amazes me. They talk a lot about young people this and young people the next. And a lot of them, as you would appreciate, don't show the examples that they ought to be showing to the young, same young people that they like to cry down every day. You understand? And when you can have people fighting and blocking a door and ready to fight with one another just to get inside, or you have people trying tricks on the security guard saying that if you're not going to pay a bill, you're going to the supermarket. And some say, well, I'm going to pay a bill, but that time they end up in the supermarket. I mean, little petty, things like this. I mean, it's amazing what you see on the streets compared to what you hear on the television. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they say on the television that there's no evidence. They continue to say, and they want to hear your take on this, that they continue to say that there's no evidence of community spread. Well, I put it to the health authorities and those powers that be that there is, and they believe there is some kind of community spread. Because the amount of nonsense that yourself and all of us have been seeing via social media and in person otherwise for the last couple of weeks.
You ain't making sense there. If the authorities say that there's no evidence of community spread, but the fact that people are fighting in supermarket lanes, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's community spread. It's just that we're fortunate.
We are lucky
that those who have been fighting in community lanes and breaking the rules have not been affected, or at least so it would appear.
But what I'm saying to you is, I understand what you say, but understand where I'm coming from when I make that point. What I'm trying to say to you is, Peter Wickham, right, is that, yes, they say that there's no evidence of community spread. Don't you think, and let me put this question to you, don't you think that it's highly possible that there is?
But sir, it is possible. It is possible that there could have been. And it is also possible that there might have been, because we will know in 2 weeks' time what would have happened 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I'm making to you is that we all agree that the behavior is not behavior that should be encouraged. It is inconsistent with the rules and regulations. My challenge is this, sir. I have not witnessed anything like that, and I have not been involved in anything like that. And the reason for that is very simple, that I, generally speaking, have enough stuff in my house to last about 2 weeks. When the shutdown came, I was relatively well prepared. I wasn't thrilled at being left without certain things, but ultimately I was able to survive. There are a number of people in Barbados who do not have that luxury. And my concern from the beginning has always been not for people like myself, but for people who essentially shop based on a weekly income. So the gardener, for example, who has to work for $100 and then takes that $100 directly to the shop and buys milk and biscuits and different things that he needs to get through the week. That's the guy that I am concerned about. That's the guy that when he is told of a lockdown, will rush to the supermarket to ensure that at least he got sardines and different things to take care of his family through that 2-week period. And that's a challenge. I would argue that that incident or the incidents that occurred on the day that the lockdown was announced, I think that that was most unfortunate. I think in many ways it was precipitated by the announcement and could have been avoided. And I think that that was our lowest point in terms of us as a civilization for a long time. And I hope it won't be repeated. But I cannot judge anyone that was involved in that activity because I don't know what they were feeling.
Okay, but on top of that, I also want to know from you what you think of the, it seems to me, and I stand corrected, that there's some pressure being placed on the powers that be, on the PM and the acting PM and others of the ruling BLP party, that by the private sector to somehow coerce them into opening back. But you hear people asking, oh, why can't this happen, or why can't the next happen? I mean, it is obvious why certain things cannot happen as a normal, everyday thing for them. I mean, stop being so self-centered selfish. And hold on a minute, being self-centered and selfish and concerned with what you want and your well-being, and think of others. And it seems to me that they're not thinking of others, because you hear them coming on different mediums, not only this one, the next one as well, you know, and asking, unnecessary, really dumb questions that don't need to be asked when the obvious is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it. And this is not a time to think about your pockets and what you want and what you need. You have to think about the fellow man, the average person, as you just said, in the streets. You know what I mean? What about them?
Mm-hmm.
So why, on one hand, you want to think about the business side of things, the economy or whatever, that right now the people are far more important than the economy, because you've got the economy going and where the people will be.
Right, so
everybody needs each other. It has to be a balance.
Right.
And right now people are thinking one way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sir. I want to thank you for your contribution. Remember that we are supposed to be going over to our conference call with the Minister of Water, the Minister responsible for the Water Authority, Mr. Wilfred Abrams, and Mr. Keith Roy Halliday, who is the General Manager of the Barbados Water Authority. We're supposed to be going over to them at 11. So any moment now, we will switch over to them. And in the meantime, I'll just continue taking your calls and say good afternoon or welcome. Good morning or welcome, I'm sorry. Yes, good morning, sir. How are you doing?
And I wait on this phone for a little over an hour, mate.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm happy to know that I consider myself important to have been waited upon.
As you were just told
by a caller a few minutes ago, people have waited on Jesus for thousands of years. So
that's right.
It was an hour.
Yeah. I'm attacking this thing from a different position, and let me start off from where you can recognize me. We spoke last week in relation to the banks not offering a service to John Public, that carpenter, that mason, that laborer that you just spoke about, that work at the 4.95 and depend on that daily pay or weekly wage to be able to go and shop.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened to those individuals for the last 3 to 4 weeks? I don't think those are the people that we've seen in the supermarkets and around the places because they had no capital. Now, Peter, the banks now come and say they're going to open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I think that's where your station carried the news to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
You and I had a problem where they were saying that they didn't have the staff in the back to be able to service the ATM machines, of which you and I that had a check could deposit our check and wait a day or two and then withdraw those funds. You remember all of that?
I remember that, yeah.
Right. Now, I am not happy. I tell someone, if I had money in the bank, if I personally had money in the bank, when they open, I would have gone for everything. Because I wouldn't want to deal with the banks that are treating me in that kind of position. But I came into some news within the last week that sort of make a lot of sense to me. Peter, you are aware of the Belinda Gates Foundation?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You realize that Donald Trump, during the course of the last week, suspend United States support to WHO?
He said it's under review. It hasn't been suspended yet, but he said it's under
review.
Yeah.
You know who else is the biggest contributor to WHO?
Who's that?
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Okay.
Second to the American government relative to support for WHO. I am not calling that an indictment. I am saying that is what's happening. Right? PT, are you aware of in England, in Finland, or one of them countries, Canada, and you have a sound wave inside there, this digital imprinting where the people imprint a chip in the people?
I don't know anything about that.
Thing. Oh, so you're not aware of the company in the United States that just bought some of the same technology and have done it?
Is a conspiracy theory that you're peddling?
No, I ain't peddling nothing. What I am saying is that people listening to what I feel like, you just had a man on the ear talking about he don't believe that what the government is saying to us as Barbadians relative to the coronavirus, that they don't have any cross-contamination as yet. Okay. He was on your program, and you entertain him to say it to John Public.
I entertaining him, but I didn't encourage him in that.
But the point is, you cannot encourage that kind of behavior because, as you rightly say, whether the information is fictional or not, I could send you where I gather my information from. Mm-hmm. We as individuals, Peter, for all the years that I had been calling you, you and I have come to an understanding relative to whether we're talking about Brexit,
mm-hmm.
whether we're talking about the behavior of the banks, whether we were speaking about how you view the Bible. We somewhat travel the same path.
Mm-hmm.
And we always agree to disagree, and we moved on from that.
Mm-hmm.
I am saying to you that we are faced with a pandemic, and you and I don't agree with how society, a few people, have been able to lock people behind the doors, and you got individuals now referring to the situation as calling us inmates.
Yeah. Because individuals have been calling themselves inmates.
Inmates, right.
So
They feel some semblance of being in jail.
Mm-hmm. Which is not an unreasonable feeling at this stage.
Sir,
I want to go over, though, because I have the minister on the line and also Mr. Halliday, and there are several people who have concerns about the Water Authority. So I'm going to ask if you would be willing to give way and let us start the conversation with them, and we can catch up with another time.
No problem, sir.
Thanks so much.